Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, and thank all of you for coming. Thank you for joining us at home or wherever you happen to might be tuning in on the radio or television or your computer. I will be followed in just a few minutes by Secretary Marquita Walters of the Department of Children and Family Services. She has some updates around nutrition, particularly SNAP benefits. And obviously, we still have Dr. Alex Biu here to answer specific questions related to healthcare testing, that sort of thing. I want to start out by thanking the medical professionals of all types who are working all across Louisiana heroically every single day. And I know that today President Trump declared it National Doctors Day, and I want to join him in saluting our doctors and thanking them. They are absolutely on the front lines today and every day. We would not be able to come close to managing this emergency without our frontline physicians. And so I think it's entirely appropriate that we have National Doctors Day today. We still have the same imperatives that we've been working on the last few weeks, and that is we have to continue to flatten the curve, slow the spread of this disease, so that more people than necessary don't seek medical care all at the same time. And with the time that we have available to us, we have to continue to surge our medical capacity. So the same two imperatives we've been working with all along remain the imperatives of today. Earlier today, I participated in a video conference call with the president, the vice president, and the coronavirus task force that has been assembled at the White House. And prior to that call, I actually had a separate call from the vice president. First of all, I want to say that we're thankful that the president granted our request for Title 32 status for the National Guard. That will stand up for a 30-day period. It unlocks protections and benefits for National Guardsmen and Airmen. This is something we have used previously in disasters response, including Hurricanes Katrina, Ike, Gustav, and then again in the BP oil spill. Last week, the president, as you will recall, granted us a 60-person medical strike team that was going to come from the U.S. Public Health Service. We found out early yesterday morning that team has been diverted but has been replaced with a medical unit of U.S. Navy sailors that will be coming out of Jacksonville, Florida. We think that that will be between 180 and 200-person strong unit, and they're going to augment our staffing at the Morial Convention Center in New Orleans. And that center is going to have 1,000 beds operational by this coming Sunday. And there will be a personnel housing unit across the street from the convention center with another 250 beds, and that will be for persons under investigation. So inside the convention center will be for COVID positive patients. Persons under investigation will be across the street in the personnel housing unit. But that detachment from the Navy will staff principally at the PUIs, at the personnel holding unit, but could augment our staffing that we're going to have in the convention center that we're going to fill primarily with a staffing contract that we've executed for doctors and nurses and other healthcare providers. Because we have Navy active duty Title 10 Navy personnel coming, to Louisiana, and they'll be working for us. We believe it is the first time in state's history that I have signed a letter creating a dual status commander who will command both guardsmen and these Navy sailors when they arrive in New Orleans. And I'm proud to announce that General Lee Hopkins of the Louisiana National Guard will serve as our dual status commander. Ventilators continue to be the most pressing need in the short term as it comes to surging our medical care capacity. Unfortunately, I don't have much progress to report in terms of having received new ventilators over the weekend. However, on my call with the president today in that video teleconference, he acknowledged our need for ventilators and made a commitment that they will send ventilators to Louisiana. I don't have a precise number to give you or a timeline, but I do believe he was referring to an allocation that we can expect to receive from the Strategic National Stockpile. And we have been sharing information with the White House and with FEMA about the timeline that we're on to exceed our capacity as it relates to ventilators. So obviously, whatever assistance we get from them, we hope to get it very soon. And I'll talk more about ventilators in just a moment as it relates to our capacity. We're obviously continuing to look for ventilators through the manufacturers and vendors as well. All total, we have ordered 14,000 or so ventilators, including 5,000 from the Strategic National Stockpile. The number, however, that we've received continues to be 191. We do think that at some point this week, hopefully today, we will have another shipment, but that would only be 100 or so ventilators. We'll update you on those as they come in. I can tell you that over the last 72 hours, the flow of personal protective equipment, PPE, has improved. We know that this is going to play out over an extended period of time. So one of the points that I made and other governors made today with the president and the vice president was the need to keep this PPE coming actually in greater numbers, because we're really doing just-in-time deliveries right now. We're emptying out our warehouse every single night, bringing PPE to different regions of the state and to different hospitals. And the process will work so that as FEMA brings in additional PPE to the United States, really from all over the world, 80% of that will be allocated to traditional PPE vendors. And so healthcare providers will access PPE in the way that they normally have. And then there'll be a 20% allocation that actually stays with FEMA, and then they will allocate to the states based on a formula that considers the hotspots at that time as well as the state's population. So we do look, and they're calling this an air bridge, and because they're flying in this PPE from all around the world. I think the first flights on this air bridge started arriving today. And so this is going to play out over some period of time. But it is our expectation that over the next several days or week or so, that PPE supplies will be coming in a little bit more robustly, and both in terms of the timeliness of receiving frequency, I should say, and the amounts. On the video conference call this morning, I also thank the president for extending the federal mitigation efforts through April the 30th, which was announced yesterday at the White House. This is obviously very helpful for states like ours because it sends a clear message that we are nowhere near over the hump, that we still have an awful lot of work to do to try to flatten the curve. And I think it creates a realistic expectation in the public about the time horizon that we are on and so forth. As you all know, my current proclamation goes through April the 13th. By the end of this week, I will be issuing an additional proclamation to get mine in line with what the president announced yesterday. And we will see whether any modifications to the existing shelter, or I should say stay-at-home order, is warranted based on any revisions that we get in terms of guidance from the CDC or from the Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency, which is part of DHS, as it relates to essential businesses and essential workers and so forth. But we'll also be talking to our Office of Public Health here in Louisiana as we fashion the next proclamation. I also thank the Vice President because he called me this morning to see what Louisiana needs and specifically discuss our efforts to surge medical capacity, principally right now in Region 1, but understanding that later it's going to be other regions of the state as well. And we talked about beds and staff and ventilators and so forth. And he also extended his personal condolences on the passing of April Nunn this weekend, who was a very important part of my office. It was the Governor's Office of Disability Affairs. And so I wanted to thank him for doing that. You know, in addition to April, we now have had three other state employees who have passed away because of COVID-19. They worked in the Department of Transportation. One of them did, another at DCFS, and another at the Department of Corrections. Since the last update, we've had a 22% increase in tests for a total of 34,033 tests. It's on the dashboard that's showing here to my left, your right. We currently have 4,025 positive cases of COVID-19 around the state of Louisiana. That is a 14% increase over the last 24 hours, and the total increase in cases is 485. Very sadly, tragically, we have 185 deaths now. That's an increase of 34 over the last 24 hours. We have expanded information available to the public about the cases of COVID-19 on the Louisiana Department of Health's website. In addition to seeing the parish breakdown of positive cases and deaths, you can now, I think, access additional information on that website as well. We do know at the start of this briefing that 59 of our 64 parishes now have confirmed positive test results for COVID-19. While there is a slight positive trend in our numbers, we still see that according to our modeling, and this modeling gets refined every day with new entry of data, you know, we're able to watch what's happening. But under any feasible scenario, we are going to exceed our medical capacity here in the state of Louisiana and in Region 1 first. Region 1 is down in the New Orleans, Jefferson Parish area. We believe, based on the most recent numbers that came in today, that we bought a couple of 3 days in Region 1 as it relates to ventilator capacity, which we should exceed now around April the 5th, and bed capacity, which we will exceed by April the 12th in that region. And this changes not just because the numbers of cases and the percentage of people being hospitalized and the length of stay on average, you know, is changing a little bit as we get more information, and then the percentage of those hospitalized who need an acute care bed or an ICU bed or ventilator and how long they need the ventilators. But also on the other side of this, we are working very hard to increase our capacity of ventilators. And so that also is going to feed into our modeling to see when we actually eclipse what our capacity is going to be. And we're not just looking at this point for the traditional ventilators that you would see in an ICU, although those happen to be the best, but we're looking for other ventilators that you typically wouldn't see there. Perhaps one that you would see being used with anesthesia in a surgical center, or you might see some used by ambulance with EMT personnel and so forth. And we're inventorying all of those and working very hard to make those available in our hospitals as well, because while they're not ideal, they are certainly better than having no ventilator capacity at all. We certainly need people to honor the stay-at-home order that is in place across the state of Louisiana, and we need to continue to practice social distancing. And I will go ahead and say it, we need to have better compliance around the state of Louisiana than we've had. Based on the information that I've gotten, some of which is sort of anecdotal and others is we're a little clearer on, there are certain regions of the state where there's a higher percentage of people who are complying. And that's where the numbers seem to be the highest, because those communities, I think, understand firsthand how serious this emergency is, how deadly this emergency is. And I want to thank all the people across Louisiana who are complying, but I am urging people to do better all across the state. Again, it's in 59 of our 64 parishes. If there's anybody in the state of Louisiana who thinks that this virus, that this disease is not in their region of the state, not in their parish of the state, not in their community, I'm just telling you, you're wrong. It may not have been detected yet, but it's out there. And we need everybody's help in slowing that spread. It's the nicest thing you can do for your family. It is the nicest thing you can do for your neighbors. And it is surely the nicest thing you can do for anybody in your community who might have one of these vulnerabilities we've been talking about because of their advanced age or because of a chronic health condition. So we're asking everybody to do better, but let's be good neighbors and understand that we can show our love now by staying away. We can show our love by staying away from people. In closing, I'm going to ask that everyone continue to join me in praying for those who are ill, those who've lost loved ones, for our frontline leaders, our first responders, all of our medical professionals, doctors, nurses, and the respiratory therapists, I mean, all of them. I will tell you that tomorrow and until this emergency is over on Tuesdays, we're going to have a lunch period that I'm asking all Louisianans who are like-minded to join me in, and it's going to be a period of fasting and prayer over lunch on Tuesdays, and so I would ask people to join me on that. So with that, I'm going to ask Secretary Marquita Walters to come up and talk about the SNAP program, and then I'll come back to take your questions. And, of course, if you have questions about the SNAP program, I'd ask you to go ahead and ask those to the Secretary while she's up here. And then when you're finished with that, we'll come back, and Dr. Biu and I will take your questions about this public health emergency.
Thank you, Governor. We want the people of Louisiana to have food during this time, and so we are announcing today that those SNAP recipients that are not at the maximum that they are allowed will be put to the maximum. This will automatically be loaded on their cards. They don't have to do anything to receive this. Only about 47% of the Louisiana households are receiving their maximum benefit. So this is really helping 63% of our families get to the maximum level. Again, they don't have to do anything. This will be loaded on their cards automatically. It will be loaded tomorrow night for the March benefits, and then it will be loaded again in April on April 17th for the April benefits. We have also, during this time, temporarily waived the redeterminations that people, every 6 months, you have to be redetermined to get your SNAP benefits. That has been waived for right now. You don't have to do anything. Your benefits will automatically come to you in March and April, just the way they always have. You do not have to call or email or text or worry about that. If you are a current SNAP recipient, that will automatically be loaded, and that time frame will be waived. We're not doing interviews right now either, so you don't have to worry about doing an interview for SNAP recipients. We have tried to eliminate every deadline that we possibly could to make this process easier. We have also suspended the work requirements. You know, there is some population that receive benefits that have to work a certain amount of time in order to be eligible for those benefits. That has also been waived. So that's not true for that population that many of you know as the able-bodied adults without dependents. The ABOD population does not have to honor a work requirement right now. The call center right now is at limited capacity. We are having about 3.5 times the normal amount of SNAP applications as we do, so the very best way to get information is go to the website, dcfs.la.gov/ get SNAP. That is the easiest and best way to go. Or you can text get SNAP to 898-211. So either of those ways will get you into the application or the application process. If you are already a SNAP recipient, you know how to sign on to the CAFE portal, and you can just do that, and that will give you all the information. So there's a long call wait time right now at the call center, so it will be easier for you just to go straight through those electronic measures to get that information. So with that, the questions?
That will, I'm sorry, Secretary. Mm-hmm. Eric, what percentage will that, will see an increase?
63% will get an increase because only about 47% of our current recipients get that maximum number, Greg.
Thank you.
Sure. Anything else? Okay, thank you. I get dismissed. That's great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Marquita. And so I'll take your questions now. Greg.
Governor, have you heard an update from your Department of Education on what will happen if school is extended and what, whether or not these students will be passed along or not?
No, I haven't. I know that Betsy, you know, the interim superintendent is working on this. As I mentioned earlier, I will, by the end of the week, extend the current order for shelter at home and school closure and so forth at least through April the 30th. That only leaves the month of May, and I'm not sure what the situation will be, what the facts will be when we need to make a decision about extending, but that would leave less than a month in the current academic year. And so I gave Betsy a heads up this morning that she should start planning accordingly, and I would expect that in the very near future there will be information forthcoming from the department. But she is working with our state, I'm sorry, the school superintendents from around the state of Louisiana as it relates to graduation, promotion to the next grade, all of those sorts of things. And I really don't want to get in front of her now, but obviously they're going to make the smartest, most strategic decisions that they can for the maximum benefit of our young people. Yes, sir.
Governor, a couple states have started, their governors have started using clemency power, and they've started releasing inmates from jails, especially those at risk. What have you done regarding letting prisoners out of jail, letting inmates out of jail to alleviate this crisis? Do you plan on using clemency powers or regulatory powers to do that in the future?
Yeah, well, we have folks who in process because they're pretrial detainees. And I can tell you that the sheriffs have been working with the DAs and with the courts to make sure that that the number of people that they're holding as pretrial detainees around the state of Louisiana is as low as it can be, consistent with public safety imperatives. And they're doing that, and I think in a very smart way. We also have probation and parole working so that they're not revoking individuals and bringing them back into custody if it's a technical matter, and if the revocation would spring from a nonviolent offense, for example, and the matter for which they're on probation initially was also a nonviolent offense. So we're minimizing the number of people we're bringing back into the system. I will work with Secretary LeBlanc at the Department of Corrections on any recommendations that he has for me. I know that he's taking a look at individuals who are in prison for nonviolent offenses, for example, who are nearing the completion of their sentence, and trying to see what additional flexibility he might want or what actions he might want me to take in order to allow those individuals out. But I don't have anything beyond that right now. To tell you. Yes, ma'am.
This might be a question for Dr. Biu. The locations for drive-through testing, there seems to be a lessened demand at some of those. Initially, they were running out of tests within 2 or 3 hours of opening, and now the two New Orleans sites, for example, are merging into one site. So I'm wondering, what does that indicate? Does that mean that testing has gotten to the people who need it most? Does that mean we should be looking at a change in who we're testing and how we're testing?
Dr. B is going to come up and address testing overall. I can tell you that every state in the United States, including Louisiana, we want more testing, not less. We need to have a better idea of the percentage of our people who have COVID-19 and where they are across the state of Louisiana. That, excuse me, that requires more testing, not less. It is true that in New Orleans, they've decided to consolidate the testing that was taking place at Armstrong Park and UNO. It's all going to be out at UNO starting tomorrow. But they will still administer the same number of tests. And so they were doing 250 at each of two sites. Tomorrow they will do 500 at the one site. And so that continues to go. And along with the other drive-through testing site that we have in Jefferson Parish. And these were, I believe, the first three sites set up in partnership with the federal government anywhere in the country. And they're going to continue to run. We were doing 750 tests a day between the three sites, or I should say among the three sites. Between the two sites now, we're still going to do 750 tests. And they are open for symptomatic individuals. And it remains the case that asymptomatic people should not seek or be given a test because the test is not designed for an accurate result for an individual who's not yet symptomatic. And so it just doesn't make sense to give that test to those individuals. But for symptomatic individuals, regardless of their age or whether they're a healthcare worker or a first responder or have an underlying chronic health condition or so forth, they will be tested if they are symptomatic, and they're going to be asked about that when they show up for the testing. But doctor, if you would just come give us an update overall on testing.
Sure. So, yeah, as pertains to those particular sites in New Orleans, my understanding is the city was looking at traffic patterns between those two sites, maybe a little bit more traffic going to the UNO site. And when they saw lower traffic at the other site, it made sense. You know, everything that we're doing in this fight, we need to consolidate and use our staff wisely. And so I think that's how they made that decision to move over to UNO. You know, as far as the total volume, I'd say it also speaks to hopefully greater access beyond these sites for people in the greater New Orleans area to testing. So as the governor mentioned, you know, we were one of the first sites in the nation that had this FEMA support. In the meantime, we've been working with private labs and our hospital partners throughout the state to increase their capacity to test locally. So our hope is that we are certainly, as you saw from today's numbers, still seeing high levels of testing. We want to see more. We're hoping that it's taken the pressure off those single consolidated testing sites. And so more globally, what I'll say about testing is we definitely do want to support the state. You know, as you've heard the governor say, 100% for the last couple of weeks, even if you don't have a case in your neighborhood, there probably is COVID across the state. We know that there's COVID across the state. So we are looking now at all of those areas where we're not seeing high volumes of testing, and then trying to look at non-traditional partners or existing partners that we could be working with to get testing into those communities. It's going to be easiest if we're not asking people to travel large distances. And so that's a big focus that we have now. To facilitate that, we've actually just updated our own public-facing dashboard. So for those of you that didn't see that, now if you go to the parish-level information tab, you'll see the total tests that have been performed on folks in that parish. And so it'll be pretty apparent to you when you scroll to the bottom of that list where we need to push more tests into the regions, and that's what we're working on currently.
We talked last week kind of the time length of getting test results back. I know you said private labs, commercial labs, about 6 days, LDH state labs around 24, 36 hours. Are y'all still seeing kind of the same return time?
Yeah, it's a moving target. We've seen that some of the commercial labs have been able to increase their pace. We're also bringing new capabilities into the state as early as tomorrow, the state lab tomorrow. We have to validate this new machine that we're getting. But once we do that, we think the throughput and turnaround are going to increase dramatically in the state lab. And again, that's for individuals who are in hospitals, healthcare workers, folks in nursing homes, people who we want a quick answer for because we got to either make a decision about their care or get them back out to the front lines. And I'll note, we've seen in the last week and really over the weekend news about even faster testing modalities. So we are actively talking to the FDA, trying to learn as much as we can about those tests and how quickly those could be deployed around the state as well.
What would that new pace, you said it could be quicker for states, what is that new pace looking like?
For the state lab.
What you're bringing in tomorrow, you said.
So my understanding is that the testing machine would be anywhere from 2 to 4 times the volume that we currently have. You have to consider, we still have steps before that, but we're hoping that really brings us down to really getting our goal, which is a 24-hour or less turnaround time. We've got some pace to make up there, but that's our goal.
Not sure if this is for you or for the governor, but we saw sort of a flattening in the number of hospitalizations and patients on ventilators from yesterday to today. Do we know if that's noise? Is there any explanation for that? And also, is the state or hospital starting developing like triage plans for how, if we get to a situation where we start overwhelming our healthcare capacity, who gets care and who doesn't? And if so, could you speak to that a little bit?
There's a lot going on right now, and we're looking at data every day. And so it's hard to say what is something that's noise or not. You know, yesterday we talked about, and today, the total volume of test results that we got versus the number of cases that came up. I think we would all feel, we feel happier when we see we've got large number of test results that are coming back, and we've got, a proportionally smaller number of cases. That gives us a sense that we are reaching out adequately. So from a testing standpoint, we're seeing these things move up and down, and we're trying to make sure that we don't overcorrect, overreact day on day. But when we start to see these trends layer out, that's a good sign. Same for hospitalizations. Hospitalizations are less likely to be affected by how long it's taking a commercial lab to get test back results to us, and more steady on, did this person need to be admitted or not. So certainly, knowing that we're watching hospital capacity, we are hopeful that smaller number coming in proportionally is a good sign. Same for ventilators. It's what we need to have happen, just because, again, we do not have the capacity right now to expand ventilators without those shipments coming in. Whether that is a trend that is going to continue is both a question that we have open, and again, back to the governor's main point, is still incumbent on all of us to make that a reality by continuing to stay at home, by continuing to do the measures we can to make sure that we're not fueling the spread of COVID. So we're watching the data closely. We're putting that into our models, but we need to also knock it out ahead of a change day to day.
What about the triage plans? Have you guys started developing them?
Yeah, so certainly. So again, individual hospitals are already doing a lot of this. I know I saw images of some of the LCMC hospitals putting triage out front of their emergency departments so that they are actively making sure that they're managing the patient populations that come in. A lot of that front-end triage of their emergency departments, our hospitals are leaning into. They're also managing patients across their systems, and our focus has been on the medical monitoring and how we can help decompress those hospitals. Since they have good systems for that triage up front, we want to be able to get patients that are ready to be at a lower level of care out of those hospital beds as quickly as possible, because they can then prioritize getting people who need to be in those beds back in as quickly as possible.
In the back, and then one more.
Governor, what pressure have you put on the mayor president of East Baton Rouge, the sheriff, the central PD to kind of limit the large gathering that's happening every weekend at Life Tabernacle? Have you put any pressure on them? I know that they had an enforcement at NOPD that where they broke up the second line. What have you done to Life Tabernacle, Connor?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, we have tens of thousands of businesses. We have 4,500 or so churches across the state and about 4.7 million people. The first message to everybody out there, and this applies to citizens, but it applies doubly to leaders, whether they are an elected leader, a community leader, a business leader, a faith leader, is to comply with the stay-at-home order that we've had, the crowd limitation that's in the executive order, and so forth. I have not put pressure on any officials to enforce that in any particular situation, whether it's in Baton Rouge or elsewhere. But I do implore those folks to comply. Obviously, this virus spreads very easily and very quickly, and much more easily, for example, than the flu. We know for all the reasons we've been talking about how essential it is that we slow the spread, and that we do that by minimizing social contact. And so we're asking everyone, including our faith leaders and Pastor Spell, to discontinue those services and do what the overwhelming majority of faith leaders have done, and that is to transition to other ways to carry out their ministry. They're doing it online. They're doing it in much smaller settings and so forth. And so we encourage him to do that as well. And you know, it's one of those things where you know, we just need more compliance, and we're asking people to do what is, I believe, their obligation as a citizen. But as I mentioned, leaders have an even bigger obligation to comply. Yes, sir, Leo.
You want everybody to stay at home, which is understandable. And everybody, I think that message is finally getting through. But what about the thousands of people that have to go to work every day and interface with the public? Yeah. What kind of assurance do they get that they're being protected?
Well, first of all, the way they conduct themselves when they're out and about is the only thing that should give them any peace of mind on that. And so, as you mentioned, we're asking the vast majority of people to stay at home pursuant to the stay-at-home order. But we did identify essential infrastructure and essential workers that need to be able to go to work, because people need to be fed, and so you've got to be able to go to a grocery store and get groceries, or make groceries, as some people would say. You've got to be able to go to a restaurant. You've got to be able to go get your money from the bank and get your car fixed and get gas and so forth. And so we know there are going to be people who need to be out there working, but they should still practice social distancing. I haven't been to a store, but I'm told that in many places they are enforcing the 6 feet limit. So it in the queues to check out that you're being told and shown with markers on the floor where you need to be relative to the next person in line to keep that distance. So those are the sorts of things people should do. And if you're, just because you have to get out and go to work every day doesn't mean you should stop at every establishment on the way home. As you normally would, and I'm encouraging people to limit their contact. So just because you can go to the store doesn't mean you should go every day, and it doesn't mean everybody in your household ought to be going when you do go. Limit those trips, but you get back to the things that we were talking about several weeks ago, and I think sometimes these things get lost. But washing your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds frequently, using hand sanitizer. To wash your hands when you can't get the soap and water. Make sure you control your cough. Make sure that you keep social distancing and so forth. These are the things that everybody needs to do. And if you are working, you need to find a way to do these things while you're working. Do it for yourself and do it for your coworkers and do it for the public that you're interacting with. Yes, sir.
All right, Governor, each news briefing you keep on saying, you know, this could possibly affect all of us, and now you are personally affected with the death of April.
Yeah.
With all that's going on in your duties, how are you honestly holding up with her death?
Well, look, I'm holding up fine. Obviously, this is not an easy ordeal for me or for anybody else. I think that my job is nowhere near as stressful as those doctors that we're honoring today on National Doctors Day, on the nurses, on all of those healthcare professionals who are on the front line. And so I don't ask anybody to feel sorry for me in any way, shape, or form. But I do ask people to pray for one another, for all of us, to lift people up and to support one another, principally by staying away. This is tough for everybody. And what makes us, you know, just from an emergency management perspective, and I think I've shared this with you all before, what makes this so unlike other things that we faced in Louisiana with respect to natural disasters, for example, is typically when those happen, Louisiana and maybe one or two other states will be impacted. And so then you have all of your sister states who are eager to do anything they can to help you, and they send you resources, people and trucks and helicopters and all sorts of stuff. And then you have a federal government that can really intensely focus on Louisiana too and its needs. And in this case, that doesn't exist because every state is simultaneously engaged in the same fight. Now, some of them are a little bit behind us and a couple of them are a little bit ahead of us. You know, we remain number three in the state and the country, the number three state in the country for per capita cases, number two with respect to deaths per capita. But everybody's looking for ventilators. Everybody's looking for PPE. Everybody's looking for medical staffing. Everybody's looking for beds. And so that's what makes this particularly hard. And the frustrating part is just the knowing what you need And the needs have been the same for a long time, and then it's just really hard to make the kind of progress that you know you need to make in the time within which you think you have to do it. And then the other part of that is we need people to give us as much time as possible by flattening that curve. And even if that's only a couple of days, the big thing is that while you delay when you're going to exceed your capacity to deliver health care, you're not going to exceed it by as much as you would as if you don't do these things around social distancing and so forth. So I mean, this is a tough emergency, but it's much tougher on other people than it is on me, and principally our frontline medical workers. Look, I want to thank y'all for continuing to cover this emergency and allow us to communicate with the people of Louisiana. And I know that sometimes you all like a different story every day. The biggest story remains the one we've been talking about for weeks now, and I need your help to communicate with the people of Louisiana, and that is what they should be doing individually in order to slow the spread. That is the single biggest thing that needs to be communicated to them, and do the rest of your reporting as well. But please don't forget to talk about the stay-at-home order, the crowd limitation, the social distancing, all of those things which are going to help us slow the spread and manage this emergency to the best of our ability. So thank you all very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.